Hola, Scotty. ¿Cómo estás usted?
Wait a minute. Yeah, no, I wasn't recording, so I thought I'd better not answer till I was recording.
All right, let's try this again.
¿Cómo estás usted? That's very formal of you.
Oh, I don't know how to speak anyways, under any circumstances.
And you're mixing your informals with your formals.
But other than that, it's perfect, isn't it? Oh, wait.
It was absolutely brilliant.
Okay, should I say, hola, Scotty, ¿qué tal?
Ah, see, now we're being better. Muy bien,
oh.
And John, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien, oh, sí.
También. Excelente.
Scotty, you know,
I think we should go back to our native language of bullshit before
avoid
these other words.
Well, Scotty, speaking of native language of bullshit, can I complain bitterly about the Objective-C Swift bridge?
Oh yes, I mean, you know, let's get with the sign of the times. Do that.
In the ongoing, you know, hopes to get this project I've been working on for more than a year now out safely into its full QA allocation, which should be starting next week, because of the nature of how we have to allocate, but that's a separate tale. But there was something, some logging that we needed to have to be able to kind of log cases where there's problems, so we can kind of get an idea about how prevalent the problem is, and it has to do with the behavior of Wi-Fi networks in different parts of the world. But anyway, you know, that logging was being done, and our logging system, as you might imagine, it doesn't, you know, it gangs up logging messages, and then, you know, and it's kind of considered lower priority. You want to get the logging messages, but you don't necessarily want logging to, you know, to take up valuable network capabilities when you're trying to download something or, you know, to get a response. So it's something that happens as background processes, so it looks for opportune moments to send logging messages. Excuse me. And so, I was doing some testing to you know, some manual QA testing with an engineer, and he had a very tricky situation. It's like, well, if it's set up in this particular way with this type of connection history in this circumstances, I'm not certain whether this is behaving correctly. And, you know, it was because the spec could be interpreted in different ways, I suppose, as sometimes they can be. In order to be able to kind of get an idea about what's going on, I really needed to stop the app in the debugger, and I needed to do it in, you know, on a phone that I could develop on. So I got to that point. Everything was really great. And then I noticed that upon app launch, the shit would just quit. Like, and I'm like going, fuck, I've introduced some horrible bug, but in fact, no. We do use asserts, NS assert, in various places. In our code, and for the audience member who's listening who doesn't know this, in case that, well, yes, for those who may not be familiar, NS assert will basically allow you to stop execution of your program, i.e. quit the damn thing, but it will do it only in debug, for debug builds. And so it's kind of like a way of raising the alarms. Like, you know, if this happens, usually it means like there's some tricky condition, and I want, you know, I want either me as a developer working on it or some other developer to stop the universe and say, hey, I've got the app in this state. And while that happened, while I had the app in my state that I desperately needed, so I, you know, normally the thing you do to clear out this problem would be to just basically reset the app, log out, reset everything. And I really didn't want to do that, so I had to then, you know, comment out the code, run it again, solve my problem, which I did, which was, you know, and it takes a while to get it into that state, so I was very pleased and high-fiving myself. But then I thought, well, this is not very good. And then I had to spend a bunch of time debugging it with the person whose log message it was. And it was basically, it came down to when you have a bunch of data and you have to turn it into JSON, and there are methods that you can ask, at least in ASON, NSJSON serialization, to basically say, can this be serialized? Because therein lies the rub. In Objective-C, you can fucking throw anything you want into a dictionary. And in days and years and millennia gone by, when it came time to serialize it, like to turn it into a property list or even to turn it into JSON, it would, on its own, each object, it would basically ask the object, it would say, find out whether the object itself was already serializable. You know, was it a string, for example, already? Well, you don't need to do anything to it. But other objects you could have a description for, or it can, if it's one of Apple's classes, they may know how to deal with it, to turn to something that can be turned to. And so, for instance, there are some classes, this is getting really long-winded, but there are some classes like NSURL or UID. So an NSURL is something, NSURL, you think about an URL, a URL, this is basically, it's a string because it's HTTPS or something along those lines. But in fact, there's an object wrapper that has all these methods. So the NSURL itself is not serializable, but for purposes of logging or something like that, you know, turning into its absolute string, I think I'm pretty sure about this, that NS Dictionary would do you the solid and just basically turn it into its serializable state. Another great example is UUID. Like a UUID, as it appears in the world, is basically it's an alphanumeric long string. But then there's a wrapper around it that can do all these different calculations and code and decode it, blah, 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 blah. So on the Swift side of things, my colleague had logged the UID and not its UID string. And that, in fact, would cause that portion of that dictionary in a miasma of arrays of these, logging statements fail to log, and it failed. It would basically, in debug things, debug build to the app, stop execution of the application out in the field. It just would drop the entire thing. So as a result, by virtue of trying to log the condition and include a UUID, we got no logging. And it took a while and took many unnatural acts to be performed in the debugger, trying to figure out which item using subscripts and whatnot to try and narrow down which item in the array of hundreds of backlog messages that need to get sent up the server. And I persevered, and I didn't throw anything, Scotty. I felt like, a Zen master Sherlock Holmes. But then somebody just said, she's like, well, Captain Obvious, you can't do this. Well, that's actually what I said to my colleague. But anyway, it all's well that ended well. But I don't know. This is of interest to precisely negative nobody.
I say, if you take the number of listeners we have and add one and then subtract that from the numbers of listeners we have, that's the number of people interested listening right now.
Scotty, that's not true. First of all,
I just basically wanted to make sure I removed all the listeners plus myself.
Oh right. Oh my god. Oh my god, that's even worse. It keeps getting worse. Scotty.
No. It's what you're talking about is we've said this many, many times before, and I think, and so let's reiterate it, because we've not spoken about the high-level stuff of this for a long time. But on the whole, the fact that Apple got Swift and Objective-C to talk to each other at all, considering that, Swift is a, thoroughly type-safe language and Objective-C is not... shall we say, it is actually quite impressive. But it's never going to be perfect, and there are going to be times and places where just bad things or no things happen, and it just doesn't work. We're working with an Objective-C code base. Anything before about 3 years ago, written before 3 years ago, is Objective-C. Any new files since then will normally be in Swift. Occasionally we write in Objective-C simply because we don't want to deal with some of the bridging. And so it's easier to write a new bit just in Objective-C because it's just simpler, but on the whole in Swift. But equally, we try and totally minimalize the interface between the two. In other words, we say, well, actually, we're just going to create new stuff, brand new stuff in Swift, and even though it means we might have to then replicate some of the things that have already been done, we'll just make it a very simple call for Objective-C, and then we'll let Swift take over and do whatever it needs to do, as opposed to trying to pass. We're trying to minimize the shit that we pass around, if you want to phrase it that way. Not because it doesn't work, because firstly, it means over time we're going to replace all the Objective-C code with Swift code, so we're sort of doing it by making sure that we can load this stuff in the Swift environment. And it just means we don't end up with some of this stuff. So again, on the whole, Objective-C Swift bridging is an amazing piece of engineering for which Apple probably weren't given enough credit, to be honest. It has problems, and it's not. I don't think it's going to get any better than it does now. I can't remember the last time Apple mentioned Objective-C anywhere. Was a little while Yeah, so we haven't really seen a what's new in Objective C session at WWDC for a few years, that's for sure. So, John, I understand your pain. What do you do? You don't want to go back and rewrite everything because of the problems, but you know, you're going to keep coming across the odd thing like this, aren't you?
Indeed. Well, you know, we're switching to yet another logging system. And so that's kind of the thing. I'll say one more thing. I've remembered this in the show notes. There's some, you know, we have a rather active Swift discussion channel on Slack at work. And so people are posting kind of various, proposals for Swift language, especially when they get, accepted. And there's one that basically allows you to write Objective-C implementations in Swift. So it basically helps if for whatever reason, like if you're making you're an API vendor, and you have people who have reason that they're going to be in Objective-C for a while, and you don't want to write new stuff in Objective-C, but it has to work in Objective-C. And so you can do an Objective-C implementation. You basically write a header file saying, here are the methods I'm going to expose, but the actual implementation can be done entirely in Swift. I thought that was kind of interesting. Not that that's not our case, but it just basically speaks to how hard it is to be able to make something, to make this transition. But
can't you do that just by basically creating an empty Objective-C object and then a Swift extension on it? I guess what the trouble is, I guess what you're trying to avoid is the moment you want anything to be touchable in Objective-C, it has to be rooted from NS object.
I think that's
Often you don't want the NS object baggage within your Swift code.
Right.
And the only reason something is from NS object is to make it Swift transported. Yes. Yeah, so to be able to create an Objective-C header that then talks to a Swift object that isn't an NS object, but I can't really see how that would work because the whole Swift system the whole Objective-C system totally depends on everything is from NS object. It's just I can't see how they could ever make that work, to be honest. Not that I know bugger all about compilers and anything like that. But even I, with my knowledge that you could squeeze onto the end of a pin, think that might be difficult.
Yes, well, Scotty, you said you spoke the keyword pain. Can we talk of pain for a moment while we're going?
Ping?
Pain, P-A-I-N.
Oh, pain. I thought you said ping.
No.
Oh, dear, we're having more than just Spanish-English problems with translation today. John, let me know about your pain.
Well, I have been in pain for more than a week now, and because I met friend of the show and still admitted partial listener Jeppy from Invasive Code. Invasive Code, Invasive Code.
Code, Invasive Code, Invasive Code. Everybody loves Invasive Code.
That's right. And so it's been a while since I've seen Jeppy, so I was very happy when I received a FaceTime call, and it turned out he was stalking me. No, but he and his family were in San Francisco up from the sunny climes of the South Bay, and so I wasted not a moment of time and biked over to say hello to him and to say hello to his kids. And he has lovely daughters who are they love running around and playing time, and they love attacking big monsters like me. And so I have the standard game, which I play, called Mr. Crocodile, which usually is me terrorizing kids. So I ran around with them for a little bit, but I had to run to catch a movie. But I promised I would terrorize them further the next day. And the next day, kind of true to my word, I was playing with them at this glorious place called Tunnel Top Parks, which has these fairly large expanses of grass. So there's plenty of room for me to play with them. And so we played a couple of games. We played Duck Duck Goose. We played Freeze Tag, and we played Mr. Crocodile. And there got a point where, Mr. Crocodile had lulled them into thinking that I was asleep. And then they come up and then they start trying to poke at me before I wake up and start chewing on them. And they were surrounding me. And it got to the point where I was running pretty fast, and I had to make the split-second decision as to which would be better. Would it be better for me to fall onto one of Jeppy's kids, who I know he loves, than have that awkward conversation like, sorry, I crushed your tiny love, or do I kind of pivot and fall myself? Well, I foolishly made the decision to preserve their life and not mine, and I fell on kind of my side. And I'm pretty certain I cracked a rib. I haven't been to have it x-rayed, but it hurt quite a bit for quite a bit of time. I kind of managed to recover, and I got to the point where it only hurt when I breathed or moved. So I figured, well, that's progress. And then the foul child came home, and he brought three of his friends from school. And with the three friends, they were brought some grievous communicable disease that they've been passing back and forth to each other. So I've been coughing up a lung as well for the last several days. So I have been in pain. So, Jeppy, I wasn't going to tell you this except by telling everybody in the world that such is my love and devotion to your children that I not only entertain them, but I also have been paying the price for it. But I would do it again because I still like playing with little kids.
Well, I have to say that a couple of things I'm going to pick up from that. Firstly, I am glad that this podcast is a remote recording and we have at least 6,000 miles between us at this moment in time. So there's no chance I'm going to catch your cold. And I think you have probably just given us this week's podcast title with "I Crushed Your Tiny Love." Interpret as you will.
Yeah.
But there we go. Oh, dear. So, John, I maybe have done something really stupid this week.
That's next week's title.
Yeah. Analytics for small companies. I mean, Facebook, you know, you probably have more analytics than you can throw a dog at. And the cost of, you know, your analytics bill within Facebook, whether you have internal analytics, you know, with your own servers or whether you're paying some company, I have no idea. But your analytics bill is probably, you know, the size of a small nation's GDP, I would imagine, with the way that the Facebook is. But for small companies like ours, analytics are... a pain in the ass, shall we say, particularly macOS, because a lot of the analytics libraries don't specifically support macOS, or they, you know, you might get it to run on macOS. So there's a combination of, firstly, they're quite expensive by standards. I mean, you're often, even on a small plan, you're paying hundreds of dollars a month. For stuff. Their SDKs tend to be big, bulky, and crappy in your application, and have more dependencies than, you know, something with a lot of dependencies. I was trying to think of some humorous there, but I couldn't think of anything. And so we've been using a small independent analytics package for a while, partly because it's very privacy driven. It's very specifically written for, you know, the Apple platform, and not necessarily Apple, but, you know, for small developers like us. But there's been a few limitations, shall we say. It does loads of stuff. It does far more than we want it to do, need it to do. But we don't. At this stage, we don't use masses of analytics, but we do like, there are certain things we like to know that help us with, you know, program flow. Like, when, you know, when people create budgets, creating a budget is quite a long-winded, complicated exercise. You know, we like to know where people have dropped out of this process and what they were doing just before they dropped out of the process. And, you know, how does that average out with, were they trying to create a complicated budget with 75,000 buckets, or are they just dropping out? Anyway, in stuff like that. And we were struggling to make this stuff work. And so I've spent this week doing what is completely crazy, and that's implementing our own analytics within the app. And we're doing it on the basis that, yes, that's time-consuming. Yes, we're going to have to... Basically, we're storing our raw analytics signals in PaaS, because we're using PaaS anyway for back-end stuff, And then... Yeah, we're deciding what we want to know in writing PaaS queries to give us the answer. Now, this would be totally unsustainable if you wanted, you know, 25,000 different signal, you know, 25,000 different things for people across the company to know, you know, because they just wouldn't, you know, everyone required a developer to write a query wouldn't know. But for us, based on what we currently want to know, but there is this like nervousness, and I think, you know, firstly, for solving the initial problem I want to solve, it's looking pretty good. But yeah, there is that slight nervousness of I just put us down a track that we're going to regret in 6 months' time and whatever else. I'm saying this now so that basically in 6 months' time when I say, John, I'm ripping out our analytics.
I will say I was there. The dawn of that bad decision. You can say you were there.
And you can also come back to this episode whatever number it is, and say, yeah, I wasn't 100% sure even then. Of course, if in a year's time our analytics are the crown jewel of our company and telling us the information we need that are making our sales go through the roof and our user support be so amazing, of course, I will just pretend I never had any doubts at this point at all.
Or you may just say that the analytics were basically the saver thing. It's the tool that you will end up selling and just, you know, bin all of money well. But you'll just basically make it into an analytics company for the rest of us.
You see, that's the problem. When people want to sell analytics tools, they have to make it do a whole shitload of stuff that most people don't want or need. But, you know, everyone uses like 10% of the analytics tool, but the trouble is everyone uses a different 10% of the analytics tool. It is the problem. And so realistically, it's asking yourself, how much work is it to make that 10% for yourself in a way that is very dedicated to how you want it to work? And be, is that 10% likely to remain the same 10% or grow too much over time? And I guess that's what we're gonna know. I mean, we don't particularly care about lots of things. What we mainly care about is onboarding. You know, we are a complicated application, and lots of people download the app and then never use it or never finish creating a budget or whatever else. And so, you know, our analytics is all about finding out why you didn't get past phase one. I guess if we're ever at the stage that, you know, 80% of people, 90% of people, 100% of people are getting past stage one, then we might say, oh, well, we can care about something else. And the only other things we really care about is, you know, what OS versions people are using, stuff like that, so that we know that, you know, can we drop this particular OS version? So, for example, right now we support macOS 11. I think we're down now to about 4% of users on macOS 11. We've pretty much made the decision now that should we need anything that's in macOS 12 or above going forward for any feature in the future, we're probably in a fairly safe space to do that now. We're not going to drop the support of it just for the sake of it. Yeah, but so we use that. But it's mainly about tracking onboarding in there. So it was very specific questions. So feeling that we might be making a good move here, but I just wanted to use this moment to put a mark in the book and see how I feel about it in 6 months.
Scotty, I can sense the dramatic tension in the universe.
No, you can sense that most people have turned off because they don't give a shit.
Okay, well, Scotty, we've spoken of failure, we've spoken of pain. Can we speak of success now?
John, let's go. Let's leave the crescendo of success to the end. Is it going to be a crescendo of success?
Yes. So we had
that is the worst crescendo I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, you know, I can't hit the high notes, but you know that's the sound of the mighty engine of James Debs hit the breakpoint.
You can't hit the high notes. That's why you're a drummer. Yeah,
yeah, cranked back to life.
I did see. Okay, I did see
so
the.
We had our
the. We'll put, try and post the link to it in the show notes. I did see the James Dempsey and the breakpoints poster for the show that is coming up at WDC. Yep. And I have to say, it was amusing. I don't know if you want to describe it to people.
It's a play on Swift, the Errors Tour. So I think it's quite clever. And so, you know, James has been rehearsing with a couple of other members as a reminder to our listening audience, there's always a kind of a core band, hopefully one that's played together more than once. And they're kind of like, you know, with a bassist and a drummer. So I've been playing drums for Dempsey now for I think it's coming up on 10 years now. Excuse me.
Yeah, it must be close because was it the last?
Yeah.
NS conference where you first drummed for him, and that was 2015, yeah. I think. So it's maybe 9 years.
Yeah, so I should learn how to count. But anyway, yes, it was in sunny Leicester. And so that was, you know, so I've been faithfully, you know, doing, performing my duty as a drummer, which I was described, it was described as like, you know, somebody that will basically just ignore everything that's all the, you know, directions. Like, could you play the tempo slightly slower? Could you do this? Or could you stop playing here? Whatever. And basically James Dempsey described as like, well, you're going to ignore everything I said and just make snide comments. It's like, well, yes. I think I was asking if like,
that sounds like you are the perfect man.
Well,
for the
I was
job.
Asking why I hadn't been replaced by the new AI live AI drummer in Logic 11. I said, well, if I wanted that, I could have had it with much less pain. But anyway, so we've been worrying back to life. But our bass player of many times decided to drop out this year because he has too many other gigs. And I, of course, sent him a snark, a tautogram, but he has yet to answer. I'm a little bit miffed about that. But we apparently have a new bass player who I've not met yet. And I would we had a number of rehearsals at my rehearsal space up in the city. And he couldn't make the last one. He couldn't make this one. So I'm not certain that they exist, this person, but I have every hope that they do because it's kind of hard to play a gig without a bassist. So bassists are people. Well, they're not quite people too, but they do perform a necessary function.
I think it is now. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this is where, you know, James Dempsey and the Breakpoints has come on a long way from where it used to be. Because it used to be just any old person who had a musical instrument who happened to be at a conference.
Yeah, didn't you play bass?
So I think Ennis And I played bass once. Ennis Conference 7, whichever it was, you played. That's the first time they'd ever been a drummer. Mm. So I think you have been the only ever drummer.
I did not know that.
For James Dempsey. I believe that is true. You might want to check that with James. Mm. And then other people just drop in where they were and whatever. So but it has, let's say the band has professionalized a little over the years, but has the demands of the show.
Exactly. So, but that was good. But, but all nonsense aside, we kind of like played through the entire set. At least we made it through. And I said, well, okay, it passes basic unit tests. You know, at the end, we can assert that all people banging or singing or strumming stopped at the same time. So unit tests have passed. We will not speak of integration tests until we get other members of the band, and that never happens until basically 15 minutes before the curtain is drawn and we have yet another venue. And this time I will be, you know, throwing throwing caution to the wind and playing the house drum set, which at least I'll be able to see what it's like on the final rehearsal on Sunday before the show. But it doesn't really matter because looking back over the years, a fairly substantial amount of money has been raised to help various underrepresented communities break into the software development industry, you know, AppHamp for Girls and Black Girls Code, and now Tektronix. And so I'm pleased with that thing. And I keep reminding myself it's all good fun. It's all a good joke. And it does something useful. So that's my tale of success.
Well, just on the, I mean, not that the Breakpoints have ever struggled to get an audience, really. But there is definitely a feel this year, just looking at Slack groups and everything, that there are far more people going, funnily enough, to San Jose, even though there is nothing really in San Jose as far as Apple's concerned. There's, I mean, obviously the event is in Cupertino, but people don't want to stay in Cupertino because Cupertino is possibly in the top 10 dullest places in the world, if not the top 5. People are going to San Jose. And so I think there's a whole bunch of some side conferences have started up again this year. I know there's been a couple in the past few years, but it seems to really, this year there is this whole fringe culture to the conference. Even though the conference is no longer live, the fringe culture is... it's on its back. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. There's going to be a bit of a buzz in town. Hopefully that means the Breakpoints will have a full house.
I think that it will end up selling. I mean, by the time it was open to the mailing list, it sold quite a number of tickets. So, you know, that's always the thing. We will keep playing the show so long as people seem to be interested. And there definitely seems to be a core audience. Although the other fun thing about it is, you know, for people who may not know, there's like these songs have been rewritten or readjusted multiple times, you know, as the APIs change. So at first it was I Love View, which was like NS View, then a UI View, and now Swift UI View. And like all the songs that were originally about Enterprise Objects Framework and then Core Data, and now I guess there's Swift Data, but that's really nothing new. It's just wrapped Core Data. But anyway, it is surprising. But what's not surprising is our audience of ones lack of interest in keeping listening. So maybe we should consider a mercy killing of this particular episode. What do you say, Scotty?
I think we should do, John. So if people want to get hold of you and make a request for you to crush their tiny love, where should they do that?
You can find me on the place where all love comes to get crushed. And that would be Mastodon, where I'm Djembe. That's D-J-E-M-B-E, like the West African drum. Djembe at mastodon.social, or you can find me on Threads, where I'm just John Fox. And Scotty, where can people come and give you encouragement to branch out into new possible future ventures?
They can also do that on Mastodon, where I am MacDevnet at mastodon.social. And I'm beginning to make a conscious effort to be on there a little more. I've not been posting, but I've definitely been lurking, reading more on there. I mean, I always go in now and again and check if anyone's mentioned me or sent something to me. So if you would contact me, I'd see it. But a little bit more, and I'm thinking I may start dipping my toe back into maybe doing a little bit of posting and putting my life out there. So come and join the Scotty Mastodon fun, as they might say.
The hot tub time machine to nowhere.
And with that note, we will say thank you for listening. John, it's been a pleasure as always to catch up with you in on multiple things: pain, glory, success, stupidity. We've had it all today, and so if you have been this week's lucky listener, yes, I'm going to use that word, lucky listener. Congratulations, and thanks for listening. And until next time,
you take care to maintain the bleach level in the hot tub as high as is needed to kill the terrible diseases running around in the hot tub.
Happy ending, I like it.